Brett Film Radio, I'm Matt McCucci from the 59th Cork Film Festival, and I'm joined by filmmaker Matt Hulse, who is presenting his film Dummy Jim here at the festival. So thanks very much for joining us, first of all.
Well, thanks for coming along. It's nice to get a chance to talk about it. Yeah.
Well, it's a great film to talk about, and actually, if you could introduce it for our listeners and tell us a little bit about what the film actually talks about and the story of the film.
Sure. Dummy Jim is the nickname of a man, a Scotsman called James Duthie, who was from a small fishing village in northeast Aberdeenshire called Cairnbulg, and in 1951 he hopped on his bicycle with the intention of cycling to Morocco. But he ended up in the Arctic Circle, and he wrote a wee book called I Cycled Into the Arctic Circle, which was published in 55 and then again in 57. And in the year 2000, my mum chanced upon a copy of it in a second-hand bookshop on Iona, which is a little island off Mull, and sent it to me. She knew I had a kind of latent interest in eccentrics, DIY aesthetic, mavericks, and that seemed to represent some of that. So she sent that to me, and I knew within a few pages that I should make a film from it, little knowing it would take 13 years.
It must also have been difficult initially to actually understand the nature of the character, in the sense that, you know, you're portraying a deaf-mute man, after all, so being someone who can hear and speak, you know, you really had to understand the community, first of all, right?
Yeah, there's a lot to learn, and that's possibly why it took such a long time to develop and produce it. There was a bit of I had a bit of previous interest and intrigue in the deaf community. There's a book by Carson McCullers called The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, and the central character there, interestingly enough, called Singer, is a deaf-mute, and that was one of my favourite books as a teen. And I was really interested by the fact that there was this sort of silent character at the centre of a drama. So he says very little, and it's the people around him project onto him how they perceive him. And I thought that was quite a good device or a structure for a film, in fact, because as audience you're projecting into what is essentially a black hole, which is the screen, and you're kind of bringing your experience to it as it unfolds. But yeah, on a practical level, I did some lessons in British Sign Language. I went up to stage 2, which isn't particularly fluent, but it's enough to be able to sit in a conversation and get the gist of what's going on. Getting to know the actor Samuel Dorr, who's himself profoundly deaf, was really key, and I met him right at the start of the project, so he helped guide me through some of the minefields, political minefields within the deaf community. And yeah, and then also for a couple of years I ran a deaf film festival in Edinburgh, so showed work by deaf, hard of hearing filmmakers, and that was a really good way of meeting people and also understanding some of the challenges of representing sign language on screen and so on. So.
And you also worked on this film for quite a while, 13 years, is that correct? So I was wondering whether, like, when you first set off to make this film, did you have a structure in mind, or did things kind of, you let them develop impulsively almost?
Well, I suppose, you know, I knew it was going to be in a road movie form, if you like, so that took off some pressure of having to find to construct a narrative, because, you know, as audience, okay, it's called I Cycled Into the Arctic. It's based on a book called I Cycled Into the Arctic Circle, so presumably that's what he's going to do over 90 minutes. And I'm less, as a filmmaker, I'm less interested in kind of intricacies of plot and stuff, so that journey structure gave me the chance to think more around the subject, as you say, get into some of looking at the making of the film. So it's a sort of, hopefully it feels like a journey.
Yeah,
as you go through it, and that's part, and hopefully that's down to me consciously selecting to go on little diversions off the main track, which seems to me what happens if you go on a long journey, a train journey, car journey, cycle journey, your mind drifts. You're not just sort of in a single line, and you go off on these wee things, and if you have a long enough journey, it starts to get into your dreams, and so that's what I was exploring. Yes, yeah, so for, you know, based on the poster for the film, it looks like a straighter kind of movie, but once the bums are on the seats, you know, it's like luring people into this sort of slightly surreal world. And hopefully, if I've done my job right, it's internally consistent. So even if it's really peculiar, it doesn't jump too much out of its...
The actual fact that the narrative does revolve around the journey reminded me of my travels, and I'm sure that a lot of people would be reminded of their own travels when your mind does wander and drift away and you think about all sorts of things. So it definitely works. But as well as a journey in the narrative sense, it's also a sensorial journey. So how did you work with the elements like sound, music and photography to achieve that?
Yeah, it was a good question, particularly with the sound, because obviously there's going to be interest in the film from the deaf community, so some people have very little hearing, some with marginal hearing. So in one respect, we had a couple of days with Technicolor, and we worked with a sound designer called Jules Woods, and we specified, look, you know, where there's bass rumble for the tyres, you know, we want to feel the experience of being on a bicycle, to really shake the seats a bit. There are things happening there that could really only be appreciated by the hearing audience, but equally there's stuff in there which is specifically for the deaf community that hearing people will miss. So I'm kind of talking to both communities, sometimes at the same time, sometimes independently, being a bit cheeky, but that's what you can do if you have a soundtrack and an image track. You can keep them together, or you can split them apart, and you know, that's where the fun lies.
But how do you think this film kind of stands in the current debates on accessibility?
Well, that's another interesting question. It's really complicated, actually, because if you look at, you know, there's guidelines out there for how a film ought to be made accessible, and it specifies font, you know, type size, how long the subtitles should be on screen, and you know, there's a lot of advisory regulations. But I mean, as a maker, I just always see these things as advisory, and they're there to be kind of played with and pushed, and they're envelopes that can be pushed, and that's not always been popular with deaf audiences, because it's breaking expectation. But I think the biggest decision, the most important decision we made regarding accessibility, was to effectively adapt the tone of his writing. So there's very little editing we've done of his text. So what you see on the screen comes up in the font that's used in the book itself. So you know that it's his words, and we've edited in as much as we've made a selection, but we've not done any editing within the phrases. And then if there's incidental speech in the film, which there is a little of, not very much, then we've captured that in a more conventional way, with fonts that you recognise as, oh, this is someone speaking and here's the words. So we're playing around with that stuff. We don't use any indicators for sound, or we don't indicate when there's music coming on, and that came from quite a lot of discussion with interpreters and some deaf people, and we decided that incidental music was incidental, in as much as it doesn't necessarily need to be there. So there's no... we didn't feel there was anything we missed if you didn't hear it. And as an interpreter friend said to me once, you know, deaf people miss things all the time. It doesn't make their experience any less, because they're also, you know, highly visually alert, so they're picking stuff up that hearing people won't appreciate. So I don't believe there's such a thing as truly accessible cinema. I just think there's all the variants, and you should work with what supports the story you're trying to tell and the experience you're trying to convey, and not just sort of slap a standard across it. That doesn't seem very creative to me, but you know.
What is the message that you think will inspire people the most, and you hope that will inspire people the most after watching the film?
Well, it's interesting at this screening. It's funny, because I got used to the same set of questions appearing. None of those questions came up, which was great, and in fact there were some new angles on it. A couple of older guys were talking about the importance of language, weren't they, and how it's language that keeps us alive and keeps our brains lively, and communication is really important, all of which I completely agree with. So I've managed to get that across. And I'd say that was a key message, is it's communication is fundamental, and when that breaks down, then everything else goes to pot. Putting the story aside, there's different ways of making films, and I have a kind of modest hope that within this film there's genuinely quiet innovation that isn't sort of isn't so boldly groundbreaking that it's, you know, making a big splash, but there's things in there I don't think people would have seen before, or combinations of things that are new, which I'm proud of. And it's also from the point of view of James Duthie's story. I mean, it's interesting because there's this very often perception of disabled or deaf people as kind of this sort of victim aspect to them. And you know, one thing I love about him is he got on his bike, he did this thing, he wrote a book about it, he went around selling his book, so he was big on self-promotion. And sometimes people say, well, what do you think he would have made of you making a film? I said, well, he would have loved it, you know, if he hadn't been killed in a road accident, he'd probably tried to have made a film from it, because he was filming.
Yeah. And I want to also add something that you said in the Q&A that I thought was wonderful. His kind of belief, let's say, that sign language was the universal language, you know, that it was a global language. And then you added to that, well, I think cinema is another universal language. So that was just something that I wanted to highlight. So it's a great pleasure talking with you.
And I
wish you all the best with the film.
Could I mention, if folk are interested to see, obviously go on Google, and if you type in Dummy Jim, you'll get the trailer, and then from there we're releasing the film. If you look go online and go to jukeboxkino.co.uk, there's a subscription service, and Dummy Jim is the first release on that, but do get in touch, because I'm sure there's some bargaining we can do.
Great, thanks very much. This is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.